So it's been a horrible week in movie news. We have two pretty bad blows, in my opinion, for people signing on to movies. The first one is Austin Butler and Luca Guadagnino signing on to the American Psycho remake. I think this is one of the more harmful decisions in Hollywood history. Ty, what's your take?
But why? Why is it so harmful?
I think it's harmful because I think Guadagnino has a past in making more successful independent films, whether that's Challengers, whether that's Call Me By Your Name. And I think that having original concepts and stories like that is super important. And with a guy who is financially established in that realm of original films, I think it's really hurtful to go to a remake, a big studio remake nonetheless. And I think that criticism extends to Butler too. Butler could do anything he wants right now. And I think Guadagnino could as well. And for them to say, okay, we want to go and remake a movie that was made just 25 years ago and already is very well respected, very well liked, I think that's just a horrible move and a horrible sign for Hollywood going forward.
Yeah, but if you're going to go the remake route, I think this is about as good as it gets. You've got Austin Butler, peak of his powers right now, entering his prime, that could probably do a new take on Bateman. But I'm more interested in Guadagnino being attached to this project, because one of his more famous movies that you didn't bring up, Suspiria, is a remake, and a lot of people argue that it's better. So if anyone's going to do a remake, at least they got the right guy attached to the project.
Here's the thing, it's not better. Suspiria, the original, is one of the most groundbreaking films in horror history, at the very least, if not film history as a whole. And I am very opposed to that remake as well. And I think that it doesn't matter. Like, if we're going down the remake route, I don't think it matters who's attached. I think my issue with it is just that the remake is being made and that the studio has the power to bring in somebody, or two people in this case, at the top of their game.
So just anti-remake altogether when you can go a different direction?
Yeah. All right. I think
December 25th this year, I have full belief that you're going to go see Nosferatu and have no problems with it. Robert Eggers, peak of his power with a loaded cast, is also a remake. But I don't see you up in arms about that one.
I mean, if we're comparing American Psycho, which was made in 2000, I believe, to Nosferatu in 1922, when there wasn't even sound in movies, I think that there is a difference there.
But that's not what you said, though. Eggers could make an original story instead. That's the kind of guy that has the power to say, no, I'm going to do my own thing instead. But he's doing a remake.
And from what I've heard, that remake is very different and does bring new things to this story of Nosferatu, which is also just a ripoff of Dracula. I don't know if you know all the history there.
But Guadagnino could do the same thing. I mean, he makes very different, kind of outlandish, energetic movies. And I think he could do the same thing with American Psycho.
And maybe that's the case, but I don't know. Maybe we'll learn more when it's closer to, but what is there to change about American Psycho? Are they going to overtly criticize Patrick Bateman's lifestyle? Because then I think it loses the subtlety that made it so great in the original. I think Mary Harron has a fantastic film there. And part of the reason is because a lot of people who don't see through the satire there are fooled and think that this is just a horror movie. But people who who understand where she's going and who understand what Christian Bale is doing have a great time there. And I think that either Guadagnino is just as subtle and exposes more people to the Patrick Bateman lifestyle that don't understand it and it isn't different enough to really matter, or I think that it loses that subtlety and the humor in the movie takes a big hit.
I think, to your point, time will tell, but this guy gave me my favorite movie of the year. I think that he can bring an interesting spin on this. I mean, look at like 80% of the fan base, or you know what? I'll say 25% of the fan base, especially on TikTok, is just like red pill sigmas that were fooled by this movie, to your point. But instead of laughing at the movie, I think we're laughing at those audience members. I think that Guadagnino has an opportunity to have the full audience laugh at the movie, not the people watching the movie.
Interesting. I don't know, man. It's disappointing for me, who is somebody who really does love original projects. And you can criticize the Nosferatu take all you want, but I do think that 100 years is a lot different.
I don't think you should see Nosferatu.
All right, deal.
I'll sit it out of no remakes.
I've actually heard that it is kind of disturbingly horny is what first reviews are saying.
I'm so worried because my mom wants to go see it with me. I don't know if I can do that. I can't do it.
Yeah, I don't know about it either. What if it's just awful? What if it's like a 20%, Eggers flops, he never works again?
Then your point stands, don't do remakes. But I think it's going to be a major hit. I think it's going to be great.
The other horrible piece of movie news that happened is that Chris Evans is coming back to the MCU for Doomsday. I think this is, just again, a last ditch effort by Marvel. Like, please, please just let this movie be good. And I don't think it will be.
Yeah, I think this removed all of the intrigue of RDJ signing on. Like, there was, I think, a 50-50 split on it. Like, okay, this is a total cash grab. And then the other hopeful half believing that, okay, no, they're trying to do something special here, bring him back as Dr. Doom. Now it's clear that we're just throwing money at the past. You bring in RDJ, you bring in the Russo brothers, you bring in Chris Evans, and you just recycle what worked in the past. The jig is up. They pulled the curtain on it. It's gross. I won't be defending this one.
Do you think if Chris Evans does one more Knives Out and one less Red One, or was the awful one like Red Notice, was it, with the Russo bros?
No. Oh my gosh. It's the movie with Gosling.
Yeah.
And the fact we can't even think of the name is probably pretty telling.
It says enough. But I think if he does one more Knives Out and one less of those, he might not come back. But I mean, his acting career is kind of in shambles right now, it appears.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Bag Chasing. And hey, do what you got to do, brother. I'm not knocking him. It was fun seeing him in Deadpool and Wolverine as Johnny Storm. But that's what I want to see him come back as. I fear that Marvel and Feige are looking at that movie and like, okay, people are cool with Chris Evans coming back as this character. Let's bring him back as another different character. I don't think he's going to come back as Cap. It's going to be something different, but it's going to be so gross, distasteful. I'm not about it in any capacity.
Are you going to see the movie?
It depends on which is Doomsday. Which one comes first, Doomsday or Secret Wars?
I think Secret Wars, but I'm not sure.
It doesn't matter. I am going to go see Avengers 5, and that will be the test. If that one's a hit, I'm going to give 6 a shot.
Fair enough. I think that's probably the good move. I will not be seeing it regardless. And Jack, suck my balls. You won't make me. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Blast Podcast, a show where we believe movies can be more than just movies. I'm your host, Steve Watts, joined, as always, by my co-host, Hagrid's Balls. And today, we have a long-awaited episode for a lot of fans on Ty's socials. We're going to be talking all the way through the Harry Potter franchise and Ty's first time watching it. Before we dive in, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey everyone, Heath Ledger here. I'm happy to announce that the next version of the Blast Movie app is officially in development. Expect a big overhaul of everything theater related. We have some big collaborations coming up in 2025 that we are so excited to tell you about when the time is right. Until then, thank you for all your constant support and stay tuned.
All right, Ty, quick question before we dive into this. Did Katie make you take the House and Patronus quiz?
Both. I took the Patronus quiz right after, or no, I took, or it was Patronus, and what was the other one?
House,
okay. I took the House quiz after watching the first one and had no idea what it meant. I mean, I had some idea because we just watched the first one and Harry gets his house. And then after the franchise, watching all of them, I got my Patronus. I am Ravenclaw. Nice. And my Patronus is a chow dog.
What is a chow dog? Is that like a sheep dog?
It's a short, fluffy dog.
That's awesome. I am also a Ravenclaw, and my Patronus is a Saint Bernard.
But okay, so we're both dogs and both Ravenclaw.
What do you know? More in common than you might think.
I don't buy that for one second that you and I are the same.
Yeah, I honestly would have expected you to be Slytherin.
I thought you were going to be Slytherin.
Really? Yeah. I feel like Slytherin is like the ambition type. I don't know if I have any of that left.
Great. As we're building a business, that's good to know. I'll put that on your performance review.
Great. Talk through Sorcerer's Stone. Starting with Chris Columbus. He is, like, I think the perfect choice to direct these movies. Am I right?
When I watch these first two movies, it almost feels like Christmas Eve. And I didn't watch them in December, but it has that special kid-like charm. And it just so happens to take place in the winter. But these feel warm and welcoming. And I appreciate that, especially in the early movies of Harry Potter. They got the right guy.
They did. Chris Columbus, I think, is maybe the most talented family filmmaker, at least to the last 20 years. You can make, I guess, an argument for Spielberg prior to. But when I think of movies that are just like great for the whole family, I think of Sorcerer's Stone. I think of Home Alone. I think that he captures that just feeling of kind of warmth in his movies, which is, it's cool to see because not a lot of directors are able to do that.
I'd almost appreciate his Harry Potter movies more after watching the later half of the slate when they get super dark and some of them don't focus on some of the charm and the, I guess, kid-like elements of Hogwarts. And it makes me enjoy and appreciate those first two movies and what he was trying to capture.
And something that he does really well in that joy and that like kind of wonder, I guess, that you were getting at is the world building in this movie. This is a very well built movie world. Is it top five for you?
Yeah, without question. I mean, the only ones I can think of maybe better are Avatar and Star Wars. I think this is about as good as it gets from a world building perspective.
This is my number six, and I did not have Avatar on my list. I actually had, in no particular order, Blade Runner, John Wick, Star Wars, Dune, and Mad Max. I think all have. Agree. Yep. Okay. Glad we're on the same page, but that's not a knock on this. This is like a very, very good world-building movie, and I think that if it only had two or three movies like those other franchises, maybe it goes a little harder into that route and sneaks into the top five.
Yeah, without question. I know this is a steering away, but the series, I think, is going to do a great job of this world building, like capturing all the other little tidbits of this franchise. I think there's a huge focus of them in one and two, and then it starts to divert a little bit as we move along in the franchise. I'd love to see those little wondrous moments when they drop the series.
Definitely. And other things that this movie does well, this is, I think, a very good first film. Is this like among your best at all? Or do you think that I feel like you had this fairly middle of the pack in your rankings?
It's top five, but it is five. It just cracks the list. I can give you the full spiel now.
Go ahead.
So I'll pull it up for you, actually, because it's adjusted since I finished Deathly Hallows Part 2. I did change. I changed it up a little bit. Harry Potter. Come on. Or my rankings. There they are. All right. In eighth place, the only movie I wasn't a big fan of was Deathly Hallows Part 1. At seven, Chamber of Secrets, a movie I really did enjoy, but the lows made it drop a bit. Goblet of Fire at six, Sorcerer's Stone at five, Deathly Hallows Part 2 at four, Half-Blood Prince at three, Prisoner of Azkaban at two, Order of the Phoenix at the one spot.
Interesting.
Things have changed.
That's a very good list. I'll circle back around to mine later, but It's okay. Sorcerer's Stone is fairly well respected by you then. Do you think in the grand scheme of the film world, is this one of the best like first films in a saga?
Ooh. Yeah, it's got to be in that conversation. I mean, I think of Matrix, John Wick, Terminator. I don't know. It's probably closer to like top 15 than it is top 5. But it's still great. I think so great. Too.
Yeah, I was starting to list off some of my favorite firsts, and I got through Raiders, New Hope, Alien, Bourne Identity, Matrix, Halloween, Mission Impossible, and the list kept going. And I was like, this is maybe top 20. And once again, not a knock on this. I think this is a good movie, just not one of my favorites in the franchise. What it does do very well, though, is the third act. This last like maybe 20-30 minutes where the kids are going on this journey to confront Quirrell, I think is definitely the strong point of this film. Would you agree?
Yeah, this feels like, well, my favorite moment in this third act is that chess sequence with Hermione, Ron, and Harry having to play chess to move on, essentially. I love these little non-CGI battles that have happened in the last like 3 or 4 years. I think we always point them out in a superhero project, and here in the first Harry Potter movie, that's the big battle. There is no CGI battle. They're literally playing chess. I love that.
Would you have beaten the chess?
Hell no. I was dead. Dead. So dead.
Would you have sacrificed yourself if you were Ron on the, what is he, on a knight there?
That I would have, because I'm still a good guy. I'm just not a good chess player.
Fair enough. Do you think that was the hardest piece of this journey? I feel like this is a good transition from a pretty like upbeat, very lighthearted movie. This last 15 or 20 minutes is dark in comparison to the rest, with the sleeping dog even is a little bit on the tenser scene side. You have the vines that all capture the kids, and obviously eventually the confrontation with Quirrell, which is one of the weirder like villain confrontations in this franchise.
Yeah, kind of a goofy villain. I think it only works because he's not just a goon. He literally has the Voldemort parasite on the back of his head. I had never seen Harry Potter until, what, a month and a half ago I started, and the only scene that I knew of as a kid was Voldemort being on the back of some dude's noggin. So that reveal when he takes it off and there he is, I thought that was great.
Wow. Interesting. I have never really been a huge fan of that. I felt like there is some way it could have been a little bit better. That's one of the things that knocks this movie just slightly down for me. What is your last grade for this one?
It is, I'm going to stand on business. My top five are all A to A plus. I would give this an A blast grade. I have an absolute blast with this movie, but that wonder that it captures, I don't feel like I get that in enough movies anymore. So it's a nice change of pace for me.
All right. I would give this a blast grade of a B plus, higher than my movie grade for sure. And part of the reason I actually haven't talked about yet is we had a Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone seen it when I was a kid. You remember seen it?
Wow, that's a pull. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. And I vividly remember like just playing it over and over and over again to practice to play my family. And it never paid off because I was like, I don't know, 4 or 5.
Did no ball.
Let's talk Chamber of Secrets here. Do you think slug vomit is the worst thing to ever grace the silver screen?
It's such a gross scene, if I remember correctly. This is when Ron is throwing up the slugs. He's the one like cursed.
Yeah. Which yeah,
I mean,
is just
disgusting.
A lot of the curses in this movie, and we're going to circle around to this in Half-Blood Prince. I just wonder how J.K. Rowling like came to think of it. This is one of those moments where I'm like, huh, what makes you think like, oh yeah, he needs to start throwing up slugs.
Hey, I mean, trying to gross out some kids. Maybe that was the pull then. How, When did you see this movie? How old were you?
5 or 6.
I'm guessing it scarred you, if you're thinking about it now, 15 years later.
It definitely did. I vividly remember, so there were these Harry Potter PC games as a kid where you could just play through like the whole thing. And I would always go back to the Chamber of Secrets one and play it over and over and over again because you got to replay that Quidditch scene where they're like going through the rafters, which is super cool. One of the coolest scenes in any of these movies, in my opinion. And that really left fond memories, maybe not so much as the Prisoner of Azkaban game, though.
Okay.
My comp for Chamber of Secrets, though, is Jameis Winston. I think this is a great bridge movie. I think there are very high highs in this movie, one of which we'll talk about. And there are also some very low lows, which is another one I want to talk about. What the fuck is up with Aragog? I think he is like the worst written character in the series, in my opinion.
I don't understand the evil spider.
Well, I just don't understand why he's evil. He's like super tame, and then all of a sudden he just freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, and he's Hagrid's boy. I don't know what's up with that. But when he dies in, I think it's the 6th movie, maybe 7th. It's like, I don't give a shit. Fuck this guy. He tried to eat Harry like 5 movies ago.
It just feels like a weird addition, and it's been a long, long time since I read the books. I read through, I believe, number 6. I didn't get to number 7. But I just remember always being like, why is this even included in a movie that's runtime? I think all these runtimes are just slightly bloated. Not a knock, but I think that if these movies get made today, they're probably all 15 minutes shorter.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. I think they're 15 minutes longer. I think they're going to all try and do the same thing of honoring the reader. I think these movies all do a great job of trying to honor the reader, and I think you need more time to flesh out the little details, even if it doesn't appeal to a you or a me.
Interesting. And what is your favorite scene in this movie? Is it the one that always comes to mind is entering the chamber, seeing Tom Riddle's diary.
Oh, see. Okay. The unlocking of the Chamber of Secrets and going to Moaning Myrtle and opening up the like bathroom secret door is my favorite moment. But my least favorite moment is Tom Riddle's reveal that he's Voldemort and the explanation for it. I can't stand the "I am Lord Voldemort." That is the corniest thing I have ever heard. I know I watched it for the first time as a 24-year-old, but I couldn't help but roll my eyes during that part. And the basilisk scene, like this snake's big like power was that he could either turn you to stone or just kill you by looking at you. And immediately when Harry gets down there, Dumbledore's falcon claws its eyes out. It's the laziest use of plot armor I've ever seen.
I think that's a very fair criticism. The basilisk is always a villain that's fascinated me, not even just in this, but in other folklore. I think it's very cool as a concept. And now that you're pointing that out, I never really thought about that. It is kind of lame.
Gotcha.
Damn.
It's so cool when you were a kid, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're not a fan of anagrams, though?
Oh, dude. I'm sorry. I was rolling my eyes. I have to ask, though. Do you think that J.K. Rowling knew that that book was going to be a Horcrux? Or was that a retcon movies later?
I don't know. And I think about this a lot. I don't know how much of this. Obviously, she had like the grand scheme of a plan in place. But I don't know if those little minor details were. I'd like to think that it was a retcon.
I think there's a couple retcons that are going to pop up throughout the franchise, and we'll dive into them. But if Voldemort needed Harry alive in Goblet of Fire, I think he makes some interesting choices when encountering Harry Potter in the first 2 movies. But we'll unpack that when we get to 4. I feel like there are some retcons in spots, but that's okay. I mean, it's a big franchise, but there are some.
What is your blast grade for Chamber of Secrets?
B+. This is one that could have been an A+ and honestly top three in this franchise. I loved it more than Sorcerer's Stone up until that third act. The Basilisk battle, being lazy, and then the Tom Riddle, I am Lord Voldemort reveal really is one of the few eye-rolling moments in the franchise for me, unfortunately. Kind of like Jameis Winston. Like, you want to love it so bad, and then he throws four picks against Kansas City.
It's the perfect comp. And it was three, by the way. Go Browns. My blast grade for this one is actually a little higher than Sorcerer's Stone because as a kid, this was my favorite of the series. And as a kid, I had seen up through Order of the Phoenix until I got a little bit older and they let me watch Half-Blood Prince, Deathly Hallows 1, and got to go to in the theater for Hallows Part 2, which I will talk through when we get there. But my blast grade for Chamber is going to be an A-, just because as I've aged, it has gone down a little bit.
Hey, what are you going to do? I know there's some A+ in there somewhere. They're hiding.
Oh, and these? There absolutely is. Let's talk Prisoner of Azkaban, which is, I feel like, and you and I talked about this a little bit, everybody's list or ranking of the Harry Potter movies is different. The one I see at the very top most often is Prisoner of Azkaban.
Absolutely. I don't think there's a fan out there that doesn't like this. I think it's like a consistent top five, top three Harry Potter movie, and for good reason. Alfonso Cuarón's attached to the project and really helps bridge the gap between that early year Wonder movies from Chris Columbus and then those darker movies from David Yates. I love the bridge movie here.
Just throwing Mike Newell under the bus, huh?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I love the look of this movie. Cuarón is all over it with those intense, intense grays. I think that is the best part of this movie for me, is just how well directed it is. Do you think it deserves the hype to be like number one, number two, though?
Yeah, without question. I think you give it any given day, this is my number one. The more I think about it, the more I love it. Of the Harry Potter movies, it's the one I think about the most. I think it has the best and most effective third act, not just in Harry Potter, but maybe of all time. It between the time travel.
That is a crazy take. It is
in that conversation. We can go scene for scene, but the Sirius Black reveal with Remus and Snape in the room, Peter Pettigrew framing Sirius, and then that spiraling into Sirius and Remus fighting, that spiraling into the time travel sequence, Harry essentially becoming the Chosen One, using the Patronus to save Sirius and himself. I think it's the most airtight third act in the franchise. It's just phenomenal. It's a phenomenal third act.
I'm going to call BS a little bit here just because you did just read your rankings and you had Order of the Phoenix at number one.
We'll get there.
Okay.
Hold on. I said third act. I think Order of the Phoenix is a better top to bottom movie.
Okay.
I think the first like 40 minutes of Azkaban really dragged for me. I think the Buckbeak flight scene is awesome, but it takes a very long time to see Gary Oldman as Sirius Black. And that was driving me a little nuts.
The Buckbeak flight scene was my favorite part of the game. That's one that I played just over and over and over again. but I got to say, I think that this is an amazing movie. I think it's closer to number three than number one, though. And not because of the direction. I think the direction is far and away the best. But I think that does a lot of heavy lifting. I think that the third act is great. This might be a horrible take. I'm not a huge, huge fan of the time travel.
Yeah, that's one of your, I think that's one of your worst takes. I think this is the best use of time travel outside of Back to the Future. I think it's so airtight. I love the concept of it here and the execution. What don't you like about it?
I don't know. I feel like when the movie like comes to that close, I was ready for it to come to the close there. And whenever it hits that last like 15 minutes where they do go back in time, I'm always like, why? Like, I feel like this could have been just as good and even a little more interesting if we wait for that reveal until a later movie, maybe. I just I don't know. It's always rubbed me the wrong way a little bit.
That reveal, though, waiting that long, it wouldn't make sense. That reveal and the reason for the time travel outside of saving Buckbeak and saving Sirius is to prove that Harry is the chosen one. We're going to establish that in 4, 5, and 6, and 7. There's no sense in flashing back to that. You need that moment to see that Harry truly is powerful enough to use the Patronum against all the Dementors in that moment. I think it's so... it really stinks. The only argument that I would have listened to is that Rowling and or Coron do not establish a rule about the time travel. Because now what this movie does is make everyone ask the question, why don't they just time travel more? And there's no rule established to say that they can't.
That's interesting.
But you didn't say that, so
no. I actually want to think that over, though. Good point. I do want to ask you what you would use a time turner for, where it's only like however long, right? You can't go back too far.
Oh, I think drafting Brandon Ayuk in the second round this year was a crime against humanity. I'd go back and stop that.
Nice.
You said 24 hours, though?
Yeah, 24 hours.
But that wasn't the rule in the movie.
It wasn't?
No.
What is it?
And it needed to be. That's what I'm getting at, is that there needed to be like one line of dialogue saying like, we have to do this now because in 5 minutes it's going to expire. But we don't get that. So now they can go back in time and like kill Voldemort if they want to.
Save his parents. Jesus. Yeah,
right. That's exactly like, why doesn't Snape go back and save Lily?
Huh. Wow. That's kind of a huge hole. Okay.
It's bad.
My second question for you is, you mentioned this proving that Harry is the chosen one. Is Harry Potter a top five chosen one for you?
Oh, I need more from you, but he's top three. Luke, Neo. Three? I think he's three.
I John think Connor? Probably. Ooh, yeah, maybe. John Connor's interesting, though, because we really don't see him like being the chosen one very much.
Right.
Conversation for another day. Last grade for Prisoner of Azkaban.
A+. Easy. This one was an absolute blast. That third act, you know, I've got a thing about closing a movie right. It does it. A+ experience.
This is an A for me. Highest of the franchise so far and very, very good. Once again, though, my blast grade gripe with it is like probably cut out 10 minutes.
Fair enough. I do think it needs 10 minutes out.
Beginning.
You can't take the time travel out, bro.
That's no fine. No, that's fine. I will learn to live with that. The 10 minutes probably comes out of the beginning, though, right?
Yeah.
A little too much on the first act of this. Let's talk Goblet of Fire. Number four, Robert Pattinson has entered the Harry Potterverse.
Happy to see him. I was a 24-year-old when I saw this, so this was fun for me. I had seen Goblet of Fire bits and pieces as a kid, but I had no idea who Pattinson was at the time. This was before Twilight. So, I don't know. Good to see him. Are you like a big Cedric guy or something?
I'm a huge Cedric guy, man. I think he's awesome. I think
for all 7 minutes of the movie he's in.
I think the background of Pattinson saying that the movie was dorky and so he held the wand like a gun is hilarious.
It's so funny.
One of the better like background stories in movies, in my opinion. I think that this Goblet of Fire does another great job of world building, though. This is something that I think really picks up in this one after the first one. I think Chamber of Secrets does a little bit, but not a ton. I think Prisoner of Azkaban, once again, does a little bit, but not a ton. And I feel like Goblet of Fire really broadens the perspective of the wizarding world, I guess.
Yeah, we get that great opening scene of the Quidditch match with Victor Krum, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But I think from a world building perspective, you've got the piston cup of the wizard world where they do the three events. and everyone comes to watch it. I love that stuff.
It's super cool. Who's your favorite entrance? Is it the like fire stick guys or the girls dancing?
It's our boys that like all are built like the Dragos.
Nice. Who is Victor Crumb's NFL comp?
Gosh, absolute stud. Scary. But kind of nice. So you can't go in Dominican Sue. Micah Parsons?
I was going Max Crosby. I think this guy is fucking crazy. The shark, when he turns into a shark, is crazy, dude.
What's wrong with the shark?
Another fun little like background tidbit. I feel like I know more about the making of this movie than any of the others, is that the underwater scenes were practical. They shot them in like 30-second intervals, so you can kind of count the cuts when when Harry's running out of breath, which is pretty cool.
I love that. I love that.
But a lot of these games are very dangerous, and something I've never understood, and I guess this is like an exception year because Voldemort is tampering, but would you want to compete in these games?
Okay. Yes, because of the glory. But they don't... No, Voldemort doesn't die, or he's not killing people in any other year. You're going in blind. I like my odds.
Would you have, like, gone out of your way, like Fred and George, to tamper and make yourself older so that you could get in there and throw your name in the cup, or no?
No, I'm too much of a rule follower. Better question, though. Would you want to watch these events? Like, think about the final event when they're in the maze. Our contestants just go through a portal and you don't see them. What the fuck are the fans watching? They can't see the maze.
Yeah, I always thought about that for the water one.
Yep. They see what are you watching?
Dive in and then come back out. So funny. I definitely wouldn't want to be there for the dragon one either, because you're going to catch a stray fireball or something. Like, attendance has to be record lows here. You definitely don't have like New York Mets concessions or anything either, as far as I can see. And I don't know. So you think you would compete because you're going in blind and Voldemort hasn't fucked with shit in the past years. Then when would you drop out of this one?
I'm going for the win, man.
That, you're going the distance?
Yeah, I'm going to try and win it. Why? When are you dropping out, weenie?
I'm dropping out when I look at the gillyweed and say, God, looks gross. I'm not eating that shit.
That was gross. And you turn it, you start growing gills.
Turn me back. I'm out.
What's your favorite of the events?
Definitely the dragons. I think it's the most fun to watch. And I think that like whatever CGI or whatever they did there has aged very, very well.
Yeah. I think a lot of the CGI has aged well. But where the CGI is dated, I think Harry Potter does a great job of like blending CGI with practical effects. Like, go back to Chamber of Secrets and watch that battle against the Basilisk. Dated CGI, but they do a good job of meshing with practical. The Quidditch scenes, especially in Sorcerer's Stone, they do a great job of meshing practical with CGI. I see it throughout the franchise, but like the CGI is pretty sound towards the back half.
I've been meaning to bring this up. did you know there's like a Rocket League copy of Quidditch?
No, but so I knew nothing about Harry Potter in college because I'd never watched. And outside of my apartment was a soccer field. And there was always an intramural event of all these kids walking with brooms in between their legs. It's like, what the fuck are these kids doing? What am I watching? And then it turns out it's Quidditch. But I didn't realize until years later.
So, like, now, with your knowledge now, would you have gone back and joined them?
Yeah, I would be the best player in the league, hands down.
You're going pro? Yep. The last 15 minutes of this movie, I think, are my second favorite of the saga. right above Prisoner of Azkaban and right below one of them that we haven't talked about. I think that all of these movies do a pretty phenomenal job in finishing really fast and strong, though. Don't take that out of context. Yep. The last 15 minutes of this, though, I think is important because it provides a perfect transition into the back half of this series. We finally see Voldemort in his, like, Ralph Raffine form, and it's pretty scary, man.
Yeah, and better yet, this is our first death of the franchise. Like, one of the good guys goes down. Your boy, Cedric.
My boy.
It's the
my boy! That's my boy!
Okay, here's my problem with the Cedric death, though. I feel like he needed to be introduced in the last movie, or when Ron and Harry are beefing, I needed more of Harry becoming boys with Cedric. We just, like, lost. That would have felt no different if it was Victor Crumb to me.
Interesting.
But if we had more development with that character and grown to see him as a friend of Harry's, I think something could have worked there. Like, the moments with Cedric are great, where he basically, like, concedes to giving him the cup. He's like, hey, you saved my life. You can have the cup. That's a great moment. We needed, like, 4, 5, 6 more moments of that in this movie.
Oh, man. That kind of breaks my heart, man. I love Cedric. I think he is a very well-written character. I understand the lack of screen time there. I understand that as a complaint. But this death does hit me hard. I love when his ghost comes back and says, bring my body to my father. Also, though, kind of a dick move. Like, dude, just let him get out of there, you know? That said, I think Pattinson did a great job portraying him. This is one of the better deaths in the franchise, I think, because it is the first and it happens so suddenly. You're not really expecting it. And I just love the last 15 minutes of this. It's always been awesome to me. I wasn't allowed to watch it when I was like 6 or 7 because it was like my mom thought it would scare me too bad, which it probably would have.
Oh, hands down, dude. This movie's terrifying. When Voldemort comes back and, I mean, Harry basically gets tortured to bring him back, it is scary. But I love that final battle between Voldemort and Harry. Voldemort begging Harry to stop hiding and, I want to look you in your eyes when I kill you. And this young boy is like, fuck it, let's do it. And he does, he goes for the standoff. But he doesn't use the killing spell. What is it? Avada Kedavra?
Mm-hmm.
He uses the Expelliarmus spell just to show that youthfulness. It's a great moment between those two. I love it.
Is this the equivalent of like Bronny James pulling up and winning game 7 for the Lakers?
This is if Taylor Heineke did beat Tom Brady in the playoffs in 2020.
Nice. There you go. Great comp. Now, you have mentioned before that one of your issues in this movie is Mad-Eye Moody. Talk me through that.
Yeah. Last 15 minutes of this movie is you're mistaken, or you're losing sight of something. I would say 15 of the last 20 minutes are great, because the last 5 are spent with a reveal that Mad-Eye Moody hasn't been Mad-Eye Moody this whole time. It's I can't even remember his name. Help me out. Not Crotty.
Barty Crouch Jr.
Barty Crouch Jr. has been acting as Mad-Eye Moody using the Polyjuice potion. We never get a chance to meet the real Mad-Eye Moody, and we're expected to treat him as if he is an established character in the next 3-4 movies. He pops up in Order of the Phoenix, and I'm like, holy shit, I've never met this guy. I have no idea what he's like. We just spent all that time with an imposter. That's bad.
The payoff isn't really like anything of note either. Barty Crouch Jr. You can't even think of his name.
And he doesn't come back. He never comes back. What was the point of that twist? Why not just have Mad-Eye Moody be a weird guy? Like, I get you gotta have someone put Harry's name in the Goblet of Fire, but surely you can find some other reason than having an imposter lurking in the shadows pretending to be Mad-Eye for 2.5 hours. I don't buy it.
Well, who would have thrown it in your version?
I don't know, like maybe Pettigrew, someone that had already gotten into the confines of Hogwarts as the mouse like two movies ago. Have him do it. I'd like to see more Pettigrew. He doesn't really pop up in all these movies. It's another frustration I have. We'll unpack.
But Snape. Fuck this kid.
Seriously, there's got to be something. Man. Yeah.
All right. What's your blast grade for Goblet?
Dude, you're not going to be happy. B minus? Like, this is like, it's Chamber of Secrets with a couple more eye rolls for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's harsh. Yeah. This is an A for me. A blast grade. Same as Prisoner of Azkaban. This is another one that, especially as a kid, just jumped out at me. I loved the dragon scene. I thought that was so cool. I loved, I didn't really love the swimming scene. I've just never been a fan of that segment. But I love the maze. I thought that was creepy and cool. I love the last 15 minutes. It's all, or 15, the last 20 minutes. It's all great for me. Blast grade of an A. Let's go into Order of the Phoenix. Your top to bottom favorite.
Yeah. I don't think there's much to it other than we went from Prisoner of Azkaban, a movie that started to steer us away from that early Harry Potter charm. And then A Goblet of Fire, we go basically full dark, especially those last 20 minutes. I think 5 does a great job of backpedaling a little bit and bringing back that charm of Hogwarts. And I understand that Umbridge is this big bad villain. I can make a case that she is just as awful of a villain as Voldemort, but we'll unpack that, I'm sure. I love all of the scenes in the Room of Requirement where Harry's training all the other students. I need that kind of Hogwarts charm to get me to the great third act. And this does have a great third act. I think this is the best top to bottom Harry Potter movie.
I mean, I can't really argue with it. This is Morgan's favorite as well. And in case you were wondering, and this is my mom's least favorite by far because she can't stand Umbridge.
Yeah.
And let's talk about Umbridge, because I wrote down as well, I think that there is a case to be made that she's the best villain in the franchise. I think that the Horcrux twist with her is also pretty ingenious. And just the way that she goes about just sucking the life out of this world that we once knew was so full of wonder and joy is so interesting and such a bold, I guess, take to enter this.
You know who she reminded me of was Bev from Midnight Mass. Just an insufferable piece of shit. I reserve a very harsh word for Bev and now Umbridge that I do not use anywhere else. I mean, these are some nasty, nasty characters.
What's the word?
The C word.
Wow. Wow.
She's too earned far. It. Umbridge is nasty. Bev is nasty.
The writing and like carving into the skin is a scene that sticks with me forever. I mean, that's a horrifying punishment.
And the montage of all of the different decrees piling up on the walls, her bullying McGonagall with her power, trying to kick out one of the teachers early in the movie. She's crying. Mm-hmm. The goofy one. I think it's from Goblet of Fire.
Trelawney. Yeah. The psychic one.
Yeah, poor thing. Bawling her eyes out, getting kicked out of Hogwarts.
And
I don't like Umbridge.
I think you'll be hard-pressed to find anybody who does. But I think that going back, and I just have to bring up the twist again where like the necklace is a Horcrux. I think that's so just an interesting twist on, okay, maybe she's not like a horrible, horrible person. Maybe this was influencing her. We'll never fucking know. And we honestly shouldn't really care.
Does she retrieve that necklace in 5? I don't think she does. She retrieves it in 7.
No, no, no. She's had it.
I'm going to argue against. I think steals it. I think she steals it from someone and it's talked about in 7.
I don't think so.
All right, Mr. Harry Potter. We're going to fact check this and see who wins.
I get like all of my knowledge on this stuff from Morgan, so blame her if anything. What is better for you, the front half or the back half of the saga?
Oh, it's so tough. I think the back half lives in my top five. More of them do. So I'm going to say the back half. Even though I love that charm of early Harry Potter, I have more eye rolls in 2 and 4 that I just don't have in the back half, except for one movie that we haven't talked about yet, and we will unpack that.
I think that 3 of the 4 back half movies feel like just awesome payoff for like the work of getting through all this world building in 1 through 4. I feel like this is the, all right, now let's go into the story that I've wanted to tell, but I wanted to establish these characters first and all of that. I think it's so, I love the back half of this saga a lot more than the front. And even with my love for Goblet of Fire, this is true. This is still a pretty stark shift, though. I mean, we talked about the last 15, 20 minutes of Goblet of Fire being so much darker than the rest. I mean, the start of Order of the Phoenix, I feel like, is just as dark as the end of Goblet of Fire. And then it keeps that tone for the entire runtime, which is, there is very little joy in this movie.
See, that's where I push back a little bit. I think all of that joy and charm comes from the Room of Requirement and Harry working with all the other students, teaching them spells, how to defend themselves against the dark arts. That's what I needed in Goblet of Fire. We didn't have any of those little moments. Like in Goblet of Fire, you would think the dance is that little moment of Hogwarts charm, and Ron ruins it because he's a fucking loser and is mean to Hermione in all these movies. I think that 5 does a good job of blending despite the darker tone. But that's not to say that I don't like the darker tone. The last like 20 minutes of this movie is unbelievable. You were talking about Cedric having a death that happens and we just move off of it. Sirius Black is one of my favorite characters. He gets hit with the spell, he dies, and that's it. Like the war continues, you just got to keep moving. And I think Harry Potter does a great job of doing that with all of its characters. We have Hedwig die like 3 movies later. It happens, and it's never brought up again. And I don't think that's lazy writing. I think it's just, hey, we're in the middle of a war. Stuff's going down. This stuff happens. We got to keep it rolling.
Yeah, I think that really they do a lot of deaths very, very well in this movie. Even in Hallows Part 2, we'll get there. But just walking past and you start to recognize some characters that you see are just laying there, and you didn't even get to see it, which I do think off-screen deaths can work in this series specifically. But Sirius's death is another big stepping stone in the franchise, it feels like, because Cedric is that introductory death. We have that side character that maybe you didn't feel much for, but a lot of people did really enjoy in number 4. And now we're going to a character who we know means so much to Harry, and we've seen that in a couple of movies now. And I think that that is another just huge step in the direction for the rest of the saga.
The gut punch line of Sirius calling him James instead of Harry is still one of the best moments of the series.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's wonderful. Gary Oldman is awesome as Sirius as well. There are some funny stories about my sister just freaking out over Sirius's death that I won't get into on the pod because I should have asked permission first. But
what I love about this third act is that you get this Sirius Black death, but then a bunch of other shit goes down. You get Dumbledore versus Voldemort. This is like Dooku versus Yoda in Attack of the Clones. The two of the best going at it. I didn't realize that these battles weren't just like beams of light. Like they're using water and sand and dust and throwing all types of bullshit at each other. It's awesome. But then that goes away. And then Harry is battling his own mind as the final battle of this movie. I think it's brilliant. He's trying to fight off Voldemort, trying to fight off all the dark thoughts in his head. This franchise is so good. But Order of the Phoenix, I think, does it best.
2 things. Number 1, you just dropped a compliment for Attack of the Clones. Thank you. Number 2, another part of this that I do want to shout out in this last like 30 minutes or so, the setting is awesome. This weird, like soulless room that they're in, and fighting this out, I think works perfectly for this battle.
I think they're in the Ministry of Magic, maybe.
Mm-hmm. I think so, but don't quote me.
I think we need to talk about it now because she doesn't pop up a lot in the next couple of movies, and I thought she would. Ginny is being set up to be the super overpowered wizard. In the Room of Requirement, she's basically Harry's equal with all of these spells. And then when they go to pick out like the blue glowing bulbs of prophecies, she blasts all of the Death Eaters and like blows up a bunch of cases of these prophecies. She's clearly being established as the super powerful wizard, and she's in like 4 minutes of the rest of the movies. I did not see that coming. Is she important in the books? Did I miss something? Like, help me out here.
Honestly, I don't remember her much in the books. I've never been a big Harry and Ginny fan.
Don't tell me you were a Harry and Cho guy.
No, I was not. I was a Harry and Luna guy.
No, not Luna.
Yeah,
I love Luna, but really?
Yeah, I think that they would be great together. I think that the bonding over like the shit they've seen is cool. And I like the just on-screen chemistry between the actors. I have always thought that they should be together.
Luna's a little goofy, but she's one of my favorite side characters for sure.
What's the blast grade? Order of the Phoenix, A+?
A+, so easy. I love this movie.
This is an A+ for me as well.
All right.
Believe it or not. Yeah.
All right. Agreement.
Yep, you got it out of me. This is another one that I have loved since the first time I saw it. I think I was 9 when I saw this one. And it has always stuck with me as one of my favorites. When I was a kid, my favorite scene in this movie was the Fred and George breaking up the tests. I thought that was so cool.
Dude, that's one of the best tracks in the movie, mm-hmm. in any of the movies. Fireworks, such a good song. I love it. We got to talk songs at some point. There's so many good ones.
We will. Also, one of Morgan's favorite scenes is that one as well. Half-Blood Prince. My favorite of the franchise. This is my A++ blast grade. And what sets it apart as the best of the saga for me is, once again, the third act. What do you know? These movies know how to close it out. And part of the reason this does it so well is the music. Let's talk music now, man.
Journey to the Cave, I think, is the best song in the entire franchise. This is right when Dumbledore and Harry are like, hey, we got to go find a Horcrux. Let's go get it done. They go to the cave, and it's like that wide shot of the waves crashing onto the cave. You see it in Tom Riddle's drawing when mm-hmm. Dumbledore goes to visit him. I that track is just, it's got a different type of energy to it.
I love the take. My favorite is a little basic, but I'm going Dumbledore's Farewell, I think, is just beautiful. And it fits the scene so well. I love how it plays in that slow motion moment of Dumbledore's death, but we will circle back to that. I did want to give a quick shout out, jump a little bit ahead. I think that the score for Deathly Hallows Part 2 is slept on. This is a very monotonous score. It repeats the same themes over and over again with that kind of like just dramatic marching, but I feel like it serves a purpose to just march these characters through the events of this, saying like, all right, there is no going back to these simpler fun times. We're all in here, and it's just forward, forward, forward. I think it's really cool.
I think Hollows Part 2 has the best top to bottom soundtrack.
Wow. Nice.
It's close.
All right.
It's close. It's between that and probably Azkaban. John Williams does a good job closing his final Harry Potter movie. I can't believe he didn't do all of these movies. That is mind-boggling to me. That's like Hans throwing in the towel like halfway through Dune.
It's like Hans throwing in the towel when Nolan goes to Tenet.
Yeah.
It's time to retool, get something new for the tone shift. I don't know if John Williams like his music brand is, I feel like, on the same level as Chris Columbus in that like family film sense. When I think of John Williams' music, I don't ever think of like dark tracks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I'm glad. I don't know if they moved off him or if he moved off the franchise, and that's an interesting question. But I would imagine you got to chalk it up to Star Wars. Like George probably put his foot down, was like, "Hey, look, we need some heaters for 2 and 3. I need you to make Across the Stars."
Maybe. Let's talk about the last 30 minutes of this movie. Drinking the stuff. This is another weird ass curse, man. Like, I've never really understood the rules of this, but I thought the scene was very cool and very well done. This is a great scene to have before Dumbledore's death, because it is showing, I feel like, how much Dumbledore trusts Harry to be the chosen one in this moment. He's saying, okay, no more shying away of what this is. Like, it's time for you to see what's really going on here.
Yeah, and that's something you don't get in a couple of the last movies. Dumbledore kind of avoids Harry. It happens in Order of the Phoenix, and you don't know why, but he's afraid that Voldemort can see into his head and can't trust him, and that's a complete 180. So you see the growth from Dumbledore, but you also see the growth from Harry, and he's willing to trust Dumbledore in this moment. Dumbledore tells him, like, hey, look, I'm going to drink this, and no matter what I say, I'm going to beg you to stop. You keep forcing that drink on me. Pause. No Cosby.
Yeah, wow. It's a beautiful scene. I think that it sadly suffers from the weird zombie stuff that comes afterwards. I've never been a fan of that. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. You weren't spooked out. I think that's the only jump scare in the franchise.
It probably is, but not one that I was a fan of. I always am watching that scene and I'm saying, come on, let's get back to Hogwarts. Let's get this on the road to what, in my opinion, is the greatest scene in the franchise, which is Dumbledore's death. I mean, we've talked about Cedric being just a friend of Harry's that is a shocking first death. Sirius takes away somebody that he really loves. Dumbledore is taking away not just somebody that he loves, but somebody that he trusts, someone he sees as a mentor, and somebody who he has counted on repeatedly for these first five movies. This is a main character, the first like true main character death of the franchise. And I think it's so beautifully well done.
He's killed by Severus Snape, someone that Harry has not trusted from the beginning. I mean, you can't tell if he's a good guy or a bad guy the whole franchise. And then the opening scene of this movie, he signs the death oath, like, yes, I will protect Malfoy, and if it push comes to shove, I will accomplish the task that he's been given. So it kind of sets up that he's gonna do something foul in this movie, and it happens. He gives Harry the shh, and you think maybe he's gonna save Dumbledore. Doesn't happen.
No, it does not. And Ty, I vividly remember when this movie came out, like the hold that this had over people. My dad still read the physical newspaper every Sunday morning. And I remember one day around the release of this movie, he brought it in. And one of the main headlines in this newspaper is Snape good or evil?
Oh, like, you're kidding.
It's fucking insane. Just the stranglehold that this franchise had on pop culture, especially in the early 2000s to early 2010s. And I was so positive after watching this movie that he was a bad guy.
I mean, how can you not be? I mean, the only signal is, the only question you can ask yourself is, why does he give Harry the shh? Like, why does he want Harry to trust him? Is that just to keep him from attacking or ruining the plan? Or like, was there a specific reason that Severus just didn't have Malfoy do it and like nudge him? Like, at 24, like, I'm asking all the questions because I'm 24. Like, as a kid, I would imagine that had to have just been like Thanos snap level twist.
Oh yeah, it was. I couldn't believe that. And honestly, I mean, watching this for the first time, I remember not even having time to process that and just realizing, holy shit, Dumbledore just died. Like, right.
Yeah. And Dumbledore dies and he's laying on the ground. Harry's on top of him crying and it keeps cutting to Dumbledore's face. And you think that there's going to be this Batman versus Superman moment where the dust flies up or his eyes open and it just doesn't happen. He's gone. Our Yoda of this franchise is gone. And it's so devastating. That final moment is soul crushing. And it's a great segue into that next movie. Shit went down.
It is. My big detractor for Half-Blood Prince. I love this movie. I truly do. My big detractor is Ron fucking sucks, which is a theme through a lot of these movies, but in Half-Blood Prince especially, it stands out to me. He's so jealous in this over the stupidest shit. Like, dude, it's chemistry. Shut up, you know?
I think he is way worse in 4 and 7. 7, I'm going to give him a pass because of the Horcrux. I get it. But in 4, he is so jealous of Harry because of the Goblet of Fire pulling his name. But even worse, he's being an asshole to Hermione. Hermione wanted him to ask her to the dance, and he didn't. And then he's bitching at her because she went with Victor Krum and she's having a great night and he wanted to ruin her night. Just foul. I don't like Ron. And he's like, how would you not want to be with Hermione? Ron, take a look in the mirror, man. What are you doing?
I don't like Ron just in general. I mean, we just listed, so 4, 6, 7. I mean, he's always kind of lurking in the shadows. I don't like that he ends up with Hermione either. That's always bugged me. I think he should have lost out after being an ass in Goblet of Fire.
I agree. I totally agree. And it's kind of funny and we'll unpack it if we want to, but all these characters in a way kind of end up together in the flashlag or the epilogue. Does that really happen? Like, this is boarding school. Like, everyone lands their high school sweetheart. I know that, like, you want to tie the perfect bow on this, but in an alternate universe, do you think they all end up together?
No. I actually do think that's kind of poorly. I the thing is, like, I mean, it suffers from like the sitcom thing where like everybody, the whole movie is like, oh, who's Neville gonna end up with?
Right.
You know, it's kind of stinky that it just has to be about relationships in the end. I feel like it's lazy. Last grade for Half-Blood Prince.
A plus. I sat on the couch, could not speak for about 30 minutes after this movie ended. I was dumbfounded.
As you should be. I remember the first time I watched Half-Blood Prince was from a Blockbuster rental. Automatic A+.
Perfect.
Come on. Deathly Hallows Part 1. Let's make this quick, huh?
So, watching these, I had a very fun journey on TikTok posting my reactions to all of these and them just blowing up because I was super positive about all of them. I had a great time. Like, sure, Chamber of Secrets, I had a couple flaws with. Goblet of Fire, had a couple flaws with. I just didn't like Deathly Hallows Part 1. It doesn't stand on its own 2 feet. It takes a very long time to accomplish very little. I do not really like this movie.
I think that Deathly Hallows should have just been 1 3-hour like piece. Been. Yeah.
It literally could have. The only thing that happens in Deathly Hallows Part 1, the Voldemort retrieves the Elder Wand, and Harry and the gang destroy one Horcrux, and you learn about the Deathly Hallows. All of those things could have happened in about 30 minutes. Throw that on top of Part 2, you're still under 3 hours. I think it works.
I would absolutely agree. I do want to shout out, though, the only thing that I love about this movie is the telling of the Deathly Hallows. I think the way it is told is so cool. The like animation style is just wonderful and something that I like do search up on YouTube sometimes, which is one of the really the only thing from this movie that I would.
Yeah, I mean, as a new fan to this franchise, what I was hoping in part one, I'm fine if it's a filler movie or if it's establishing things, but I wanted to learn two things. One, I wanted to understand how Voldemort built this army. In part two, you see all these Death Eaters, the huge army approaching Hogwarts. I want to see how he's infecting the world around him. And you get that in bits, but I wanted it to be the whole movie. The other thing was, I wanted Tom Riddle's backstory in full. I wanted this to be a Voldemort movie. And we just don't get that. It's Harry and Hermione, honestly, for the majority of the runtime. And I needed a little bit more of Voldemort.
Yeah, no complaints here. I am ready to move on from this. I seriously just hate talking about this movie because, like we've said, I don't think it deserved to be made.
It's hard for me. I think that this could have been a two-part movie. It's a huge book. I just think that part one and part two either needed to be longer, or you shrink part one and throw it into part two. I think the series version of this movie is going to be the best Harry Potter. Seriously, I think it's going to be unbelievable.
But, really?
I mean, this is like just early ages of part one, part two stories. They were the first, I think. They were even before Twilight. So there was no blueprint on how to do this. You look at Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, that is a great self-contained part one story. Like, this comes out in 2024. I think they do it way different. Even if they do two parts, I think it works.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Do you like any part one, part two movies? Like, do you like Dune part one?
I do like Dune part one, but I do like Dune part two, but I was disappointed by Dune part two not wrapping it up. Dune part two is another Dune part one.
But you like Dune part one?
Yes. A full one and two I like scenario is, I don't think I have any. Maybe MI once it comes out later.
I think that's the only one, honestly. It's hard to pull off. They were the first to try it. I think it could be better if they gave it another crack.
Last grade?
Sorry, Harry Potter fans. D+. I had a really tough time with this one.
I am going with a C-. Same here. And the C- is simply because I remember watching this like on demand when it first came out. And what an event it was to like go over to AJ's, play mini hoop, and talk about Deathly Hallows Part 1. Let's talk about Part 2. Is this a top 5 final movie in a franchise?
Oh. It's got to be. It's got to be, right?
It's my number 4. I've got Dark Knight Rises, Return of the Jedi, and ZSJL above it.
Okay. I'm trying to think if you missed any. Probably not. But Avengers Endgame. This reminds me a lot of Avengers Endgame. I think that this movie is a great event. I'm not convinced that it's a great or perfect movie, but it hits all the right beats and has a ton of great payoff for Harry Potter fans. I had an absolute blast watching. Like, that's not a knock. I think it ties a perfect bow on this 8-movie franchise.
Great comp. I remember vividly. So this was around, I think it was my 11th birthday when this came out. And I wanted my birthday party to be going to see this in the theaters. But it was still like, I was 11. Some of my friends, like their parents wouldn't let them go to a PG-13 movie in theaters. And so I ended up not seeing it with friends, but I did go with my family. What I remember the most, though, is I would hear the trailer for this come on during commercials for games or whatever. And every time, no matter where I was, I would run over and watch it. This was one of the most epic fucking trailers of all time. And it breaks my heart that you didn't get to like really experience the hype there, man.
Yeah, no hype. I watched the trailer when it came out. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I only know like four scenes from this franchise going into my watch like a month ago. One of them is when Harry and Voldemort are on the rubble. It's like, let's finish this the way we started. Together! They throw each other off the roof. Great moment.
Great moment. I remember seeing this in theaters. I was so early that they were playing like mobile game ads. It was Night of the Living Gummies, where basically you were just in a house and these gummy bears would like enclose upon your area. You had to tap them to pop them. I went with, I think my whole family and my aunt was there. And we had just the whole time. I mean, I don't think I fucking blinked. I was so excited to be witnessing this. This is one that it's one of those movies where like you look back and you're like, fuck, I wish I could have gone to Return of the Jedi. This is my one that I actually got to go to.
Did your theater clap at all? Were there any great theater moments?
Oh man, that's asking me to pull pretty far back. This was half my lifetime ago.
Guess it wasn't Return of the Jedi.
Hey man, if other people were 11 watching Return of the Jedi, I don't know if they would be able to tell you if people clapped. I know people clapped at the end because this was special. But the other thing I remember is people gasped when Harry broke the Elder Wand. I think that's one of the best moments in this franchise.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. Just signal, dude, he's basically Spider-Man. With great power comes great responsibility. I knew the second he picked that wand up and when they're all talking about on the bridge that he was snapping it. So great.
Absolutely. Does the big battle stuff work for you in this universe?
The like first act battle?
Yeah, well, just honestly, the whole like everybody running at each other, a lot of spells coming out. McGonagall brings down the stone army. There's ogres and shit. Like, does all of that work in this universe for you?
Absolutely. The first act of this movie is firing at 100 miles per hour in all the right ways. Harry coming to Hogwarts and basically firing up the kids like it's the state championship, and they're all happy to see him. Even McGonagall gets excited. Her little standoff with Snape, and then they fortify Hogwarts, and then it basically becomes Dark Knight Rises, the cops versus the prisoners. I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
Oh boy.
What I didn't like though was Harry versus Voldemort. Harry doesn't kill Voldemort, and it kind of irks me a little bit. He kind of just dies after Neville slices the snake, and I know that was an intentional decision to not have the kids kill anyone in these movies, but I needed Voldemort's final form to be Ralph Fiennes, and he needed to get eliminated by Harry.
Hmm. I don't mind that take. I've never had like a huge gripe with it, though. The two moments in this movie that really stand out to me, though, are Neville killing the snake. I think that's such a... Like, in theater, I had no idea that was coming. Like, Neville's really forgotten about since, like, I don't know, number two or three.
Oh, really? I'm a Neville truther, man. Apparently, it was between him and Harry as the chosen one. Voldemort just guessed. Because the prophecy said that a kid born in July was the chosen one. So it was either him or Neville. And after, I think it's between Goblet of Fire and Order of the Phoenix, you're now in the know that Bellatrix tortured and killed his parents. So I was waiting for this payoff that he was going to kill Bellatrix in this movie. It doesn't happen, but we get one better. He kills Bellatrix's boss. He kills Voldemort. He is basically the 1B to Harry in this movie.
Very cool. But the best scene in this movie has to be Snape's memories, right?
Oh, so good. I got the reveal. He is a double agent. But it's so much deeper than that. You get the why he's a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
He loved Harry's mom. I think that is so beautiful. And that scene, that song, it's so good.
It's one of the best twists, I think, in movie history, is that realization that he loved Lily. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and going back and watching old clips, like, I implore you to watch the scene where Remus, Sirius Black, and Snape are all standing in that room in Azkaban, and they're chirping at each other. There's just little moments of signaling that they all had this special relationship. Alan Rickman and Snape, revisiting him in any of these movies is going to be such a treat for me.
Absolutely. He's amazing. Maybe the best part, maybe the best character of the franchise as a whole. But I do want to talk about that in a second. Let's get your blast grade for Hallows Part 2.
A+. This was so fun. The only thing that was missing here is I didn't get to see it in the theater. I can already imagine the Avengers Endgame-like moments of this movie on the big screen. The sound design, the score, the cheers, it would be all there. Great watch.
It's an A+ for me too, because I got to see it in the theater. I think if I didn't, it would probably be an A or an A- though. The theater added a lot for me. Let's talk about the saga as a whole, starting with what would be in your boggart, Ty?
Sorry. I've had a couple ideas for this one. I was originally going to say you. You would be my boggart. But,
why?
Why?
Yeah.
You scare me a little bit.
What?
Not as much as Alvin Kamara on Christmas, though. So thank you for reminding me of that. I am still haunted. I don't know if I ever told you this. I think about once every 2 weeks, someone in the fantasy league will send me a TikTok of Alvin Kamara on Christmas, the 6 touchdowns.
Seriously? Fuel.
Yeah, I swear. I'm tortured by it.
I think you already know what's in my boggart, but that is Wildcat.
Oh, man. I really hope we do make it and we have some kind of event where we meet the Hawks and they're like, yeah, we've known about you guys. Fuck you for dunking on our movie.
Ethan, you called my daughter Simple Jack, asshole. Oh, God. Okay.
A- blast grade, Wildcat.
Let's get back to the good stuff. What are your top 5 moments in Harry Potter, all 8 movies?
Ooh, I'm going to go with the Goblet of Fire broom scene.
Okay.
The chase scene with the dragon around Hogwarts. I'm going to go Snape killing Dumbledore has to be on the list. Lily and Severus, that flashback montage is great. I will go Harry defeating his own mind in Order of the Phoenix, and then Prisoner of Azkaban, the entire time travel sequence. If I can get that, I'm going to take it. If that doesn't count, just the moment where Harry finally uses the Patronum. Expecto Patronum! And saves Sirius and himself. I think it's a fantastic moment, signaling that he's the chosen one.
I think that's a great list. Mine from bottom to top, 5-1. I have Sirius's death at number 5. I have the Patronus at number 4. My number 3 wasn't on your list. That's Harry still being alive in Hallows Part 2, jumping off of Hagrid's shoulders or whenever Hagrid's holding him and showing everybody, nah, I'm still here. Number 2, Snape's memories. And my number 1 is Dumbledore's death.
That's another great one. A fun one that didn't make the cut is Harry catching the golden snitch in the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
That epic moment where he catches it in his mouth and that reveal, thought that was awesome.
I remember being entranced in theater too with the my favorite theater moment, I think, was the bank scene where the dragon's chasing them. Like, people were on they were buzzing for that. Your rankings you've already given. I'm gonna spout mine off real quick. Bottom to top, in last place, obviously Hallows Part 1, Chamber Secrets, Sorcerer's Stone, Azkaban at my number 5. I have Hallows Part 2 at my 4, Order of the Phoenix at my 3, Goblet of Fire at 2, and Half Blood Prince at number 1.
That's so stinky.
Yeah, you're so stinky. Where does this rank among other sagas?
Dude, I'm ready to say it. I'm ready to say it.
No.
I think it's one. Outside of Hollows Part 1, I think this is about as good as it gets. Like, start to finish, sticking to one plan, one story, and sticking the landing. I'm all about that. And the last four movies, I'm counting Deathly Hollows as one movie, is unbelievable. I think it is the best.
Wow. Oh, man. So it jumps Star Wars for you.
Yeah, without question.
Okay. It does not jump Star Wars for me. I have Star Wars at my one still. I think that the reason for me to have that, because obviously we both hate the sequels, is because I find the world of Star Wars cool enough to revisit other content in the franchise outside of the movies. Maybe I'll watch this Harry Potter remake show, but otherwise, like, nah, I'm not seeing Fantastic Beasts, bro.
Fair enough. You said franchise or saga?
Saga.
Okay, yeah, we'll leave it alone. But, like, the sequels and all the Disney Plus stuff has stained it so much. I think that Harry Potter staying in this pocket, I think it works better for me.
Okay. I think that's a fair take, but I just can't come around on it. What's your best character and your favorite character in the franchise?
All right. Well, favorite character is Sirius Black. I love Gary Oldman, and a big part of, like, all of my wow moments in this franchise. But the best character, I don't even think it's close, is Severus Snape. I think he's the best written. Top to bottom, every single movie has something interesting going on. I think he has the best scenes and best moments in every movie, and has arguably not only just the best arc, but probably the best scene in the final movie, and that matters.
Huh. Okay. I can't land on a favorite character, man. I just can't.
So boring.
I'm going to give a take. I'm not trying to, like, get out of it. But I, like, go back and forth so much on these guys, and I think part of the reason is there's not, like, one character that I just, like, solely identify with super well in this franchise. I don't know if you feel that at all.
You're not rocking with Hagrid?
Fuck you. That would mean you're my balls. I think I'm going with Lupin. I have always loved Remus. I think he's a very good character, very well written, and a high point in the franchise for me.
I love Lupin. That's great.
The best character, though, for me is Draco. I think Draco is an interesting character start to finish, because even as the credits of the last one roll, I feel like we're still not sure if he's a good person or a bad person. And I think that's what makes his character so interesting to me. That's what makes him a good antagonist. He's not even a villain. But just an anti-Harry in this.
I think six on, he is the best outside of, like, Snape character in this franchise. Like, there's so much ambiguity. There's a great moment in Deathly Hallows Part 1 where he has a chance to out Harry and ID him, and he doesn't. And mm-hmm. then he has a chance to kill him in Part 2, doesn't. He kind of gets a subtle redemption arc in these, like, back half of the franchise. Apparently there's a deleted scene where he gives Harry his wand to duke out against Voldemort in Part 2.
Interesting. I never knew that.
I like Malfoy. That's a great take.
Cool. I'm glad I'm not getting heat from that for you. I was worried on both of those. Do you think Voldemort is a good villain?
Oh, all right. Might have to take the gloves off. I'm not convinced. And I don't know what it is. I feel like the books probably do it way better, but he's kind of just evil guy for a really long time. It doesn't explain his issues with, I think they're called Mudbloods. Doesn't mm-hmm. really build up the origin story of how Tom Riddle became Voldemort, like what his motivations were. And I'm sure he's a great villain in the books. I just don't want my villain to have, like, a prerequisite to me enjoying him as a villain.
I think that they do one thing very well with Voldemort and two things very poorly. Starting with the very well thing, I think that the reputation they give him is very, very good. Not saying his name, cool bit, I guess. Everybody is so scared of him. I think the two things they do badly, though, is we don't really get to see why he's so scary. I feel like we never get to see him really like just go crazy. We don't have that Palpatine moment of him like, I don't know, shocking Darth Vader and shocking Luke and just showing why he's the big bad. And the second one is I never really get a clear sense of his motive. Like you said, like what does he actually really want here and why? And I think that's a sign of just poor writing, whether that's on the screenwriter's half or J.K. Rowling's. I honestly don't remember from the books if it's any better there.
Apparently, he does get fleshed out a ton. So it's not the book's fault. It's just by the time you get to the seventh movie, do you want to set up your villain? I don't know. I think he's scariest and has his best moments in Goblet of Fire. I think from there on, it kind of, I don't know, just drags to the finish line.
Yep. And I want to end this pod out with just one more question for you. What the fuck happened to this entire cast? Like, the first time I saw Rupert Grint post Harry Potter was Knock at the Cabin. Emma Watson has stepped away from acting. She is currently pursuing a creative writing degree from Oxford. Super cool. Would be interested in seeing where she goes from there. Daniel Radcliffe is like a sitcom guy now. Like the fall off for pretty much every person involved. Tom Felton, I haven't seen a movie since this. I haven't seen Matthew Lewis, Neville, in anything since this. Like every one of these people just fell off the face of the earth after this franchise.
Outside of Gary Oldman and even Ralph Fiennes, I mean, those two are still kicking it, even in their old age. And I think right. Radcliffe had his time in the sun. Like Now You See Me 2, Swiss Army Man. Like he popped up in spots, but do you think it's kind of like a Star Wars thing where you're just typecast into Harry Potter oblivion until the end of time?
It's possible, but
it has to be.
I feel like Star Wars is different because, like, if you look at the originals, I think things were different back then. But like, if you look at the prequels, I mean, Hayden Christensen doesn't pan out because his performance was kind of panned, but you get Natalie Portman and Ewan McGregor for years and years and years. And maybe that's because they're already established. You have Mace Windu for years and years. So I feel like for this era, it's just weird. Like even Pattinson makes the comeback from Twilight. I don't know. J-Law isn't tied down to Hunger Games forever, you know?
So maybe it's a testament to great directing or great scripts. And they just fell into the laps. I don't know. I want to give those kids some flowers. Like, I think Hermione, Ron, and Harry, Radcliffe, Watson, and Grint are all fantastic in Sorcerer's Stone, even as kids. Like, they got the cast right. Like, pretty much top to bottom. I don't have any casting issues, I don't think.
I don't either. I think it's very well cast. It's just it's just interesting to me that these kids never popped up again, you know?
Who would you want to see? Felton?
Honestly, not really any of them.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. Maybe Hollywood's just onto something.
Yeah, I guess so. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Last Podcast. We know this one's a bit of a monster. We're closing in around hour 35 here. Go download the Blast app if you stuck all the way through this and haven't already. You can search Blast Movie App on the Apple App Store or go ahead and go to our website, www.blastmovies.net, and there will be a link there. You can also follow our TikTok at blast.movies for more content, as well as our Instagram at blast_movies_, and our YouTube, just search up Blast Movies. Be sure to show us some love there, and thanks again for listening to this one. Have a great rest of your week, and we will see you next time, not talking about Mufasa.
Well, I'm glad you had a start at 8. This was a long one.
Yeah, damn.
All right, Josh Jacobs didn't end up doing anything. All is well.
Nice. There we go.
Yay.
Oh, boy. All right, what I'm doing after this?
Watching a movie?
Criterion Challenge. Guess which one?
Would I know?
Yep. Nope. This is going to be Morgan's first. It's a rewatch for me.